Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this week's episode of Game Cabinet. This week we're reaching in and pulling out some casual games. We're going to pull out a small stack like Santorini, Onitama, and that one Hannah mentioned earlier.
I mentioned a few.
Yeah.
I was thinking Sorrow.
Ooh.
Sorrow's a really good one.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Sorrow a little bit. We are down a Gurgi for a second, but he'll be here in a minute, and I know he's going to gush over Santorini, so I'll start off with Onitama.
Onitama.
I love Onitama.
Tell me about Onitama. I don't think I've actually played Onitama before.
Oh, dude. Okay. So first of all, next time like we play Witcher,
yeah,
we're going to play some Onitama.
Hell yeah.
It can be a long game.
But it can also be a not long game.
But it cannot. I think the longest I've had a game last is maybe 45.
Okay.
Like cool, maybe cool, cool. 45 minutes. And that was us smoking and BSing the whole time.
You should bring Onitama over when we throw Katie her little party.
Yeah,
you should
for
just
sure.
bring it to the house and we'll all play Onitama.
Yeah, it will. So it is a small two-player only game.
Oh, okay.
But it's meant to kind of give you the feeling of chess without the heartbreaking stomped in two rounds.
I gotcha.
And the several hours of play.
Okay.
You start with, essentially you start with a very small 5x5 map.
Mm-hmm.
That you have two little like torii gates on either side. One is red, one is blue. And you place your masters of the corresponding colors to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then next to them, you line up four disciples. You are given, you draw three cards from the deck of cards, and they're movement cards. So like I draw one, you draw one, and then we draw a third one and we set it to the side.
Okay.
And then when I make my move, right, so it's, I use crane and it shows you a couple different squares, like the center square is your model and that, or is your mini. And
so it tells you which way you can move, basically.
And then everything, like all the highlighted squares around it's where you can move. So like horse is very knight-like from chess, where it's like you can move to the side by two, diagonal by two, and then your opposite diagonal by two, but all forward in that kind of traditional knight L shape, essentially. But I use that, right? I move my piece and I go, cool, done. I take that card and I set it to the side of the board and I take the other movement card and bring that over.
Ooh.
Now I have to use that move, or I think you get two movement cards, sorry.
Okay.
You get two of your own movement cards and then you pick which one you want and then I rotate that out. So I now have to pick that one or my other one that I have next to it hanging out to the side. And so you kind of rotate through. And so like high-end cards are like ones that let you go diagonal a couple of times because they really up the chance for capturing a model.
Gotcha.
And then it's chess. Your main goal is to try to capture the sensei. I think that if you capture all pawns and after four or five rounds, if the other sensei hasn't essentially gone through the opposite sensei's torii gate, they lose.
Okay.
Like that's kind of a nice piece for, especially when if you've ever played chess, you get down to, it's just the king left. And then you're playing this game of chase while you're literally just moving around one piece.
Oh,
you
nice.
Know this person isn't going to win. They have literally their king left. You know,
just run away.
Yeah, they're just playing run away. And that's where 90% of the dudes I know who play chess, if that's where they get to, is like, we're down to literally just your king. They'll just call it. They'll be like, I lost. I'm done.
My favorite chess game was one that I played with my grandpa, where at the end, we were both down to two pieces. I had my white bishop, he had his black bishop, and we both had a king.
Nice.
And we had no other pieces on the board. We ended up having to call it a draw because we couldn't do anything.
Yeah, or it's going to take an hour to finagle that person into a corner where your bishop can get it and your king can get it. But that means your king's also in check.
And that like was like the problem was like you couldn't move I couldn't move my king onto a black square because he would take it. He couldn't move his king onto a white square because I would take it.
Yeah.
But neither of our bishops could like get each other because they were opposite colors. And it was just like we just kind of went back and forth just shuffling our pieces for like 5 minutes. And then we're just like,
This is a draw.
I think we're done. I think we're done.
Well, and that's one of the things that Onitama kind of finishes up, or like does nicely, is that, hey, you're down to just your sensei. Your sensei is a win condition. If they make it through the other Torii gate, that is technically a win for you. So they give you a couple of turns. But if you don't make it in those turns, like you do manage to avoid your enemy for that time, mm-hmm. but don't make it through, you lose. Nice, simply done. Hey, you had your chance. We're not going to let you keep doing this for forever.
Right.
You're done.
Fair.
And that's what I really dig about it. And then right before we started up, I had seen a couple of expansions and I wanted to kind of get an idea on what the expansions were. They've got Way of the Wind, Sensei's Path, and Light of Shadow. The Way of the Wind adds kind of a pillar, more or less. It adds a wind spirit that gives you some alternative moves. But when you take the move on that card, you have to move the wind spirit, however it says, to move it.
Okay.
So it's got kind of a half and top and bottom portion. Top portion is your move. Bottom portion is the wind spirit move. And you can't move through the wind spirit. It kind of just blocks some movement, which is really nice. It can be a very useful tool to like try to make a move with one guy, but then move that wind spirit into a blocking position to cut off somebody and then bring yourself in around the other side to like try to capture them. And then the way the sensei or path of the sensei's path. That's what it is. Sensei's path is just a bunch more movement cards, which is awesome. I love Onitama, but it's only got about 16 cards to it.
Okay.
Which I mean,
keeps it simple.
And you'll get at least three playthroughs where you could have like all new cards every time. Mm-hmm. You can at least have three playthroughs, but even with just 16 cards and how that mechanic of changing out the movement cards happens, dozens of combinations of moves and stuff like that.
And it stops you from getting into the rut like you do with TAC or chess, where you have your combination of this strategy works real good all the time.
Yeah.
Because you're stuck with cards.
The walls of Tepi. My walls of Tepi will destroy you. George and I were playing TAC like a week ago, and I lost every round until I was like, I'm sorry, buddy. And he went, why? And I went, click, and set down a wall, like second or third piece. And I went, walls of Tepi. I'm even forewarning you. Just keep your shit away from my shit. And he placed a piece, and I just started that hop mechanic and started winning from there on out, but was doing terrible until then.
Doing terrible. Speaking of George.
Speaking of George. Oh, hi, George.
Wild George appears in the wild.
A bit a little. A wild Gurgi appears. Well, cool, because I just kind of finished up a brief like little discussion of Onitama. I'm talking some cash games like Onitama, one that I know you're going to gush over, so I was waiting for you. Santorini.
What?
Santorini.
I recently got to play for the first time.
Hey.
I get it. I now get it. I 100% get it now. I was always like, man, this game does look neat, George, but why so on it? Played it for the first time, I was like, oh, this is why, 100%.
It's so simple, yet so fun. Also, hello, everybody.
Also, hello.
But yeah, like they say it on the back of the box, it's like a 30-second teach and like a long time to like master. Or whatever it is. But that's like so many other great strategy games.
Like Onitama. That's like, kind of why I brought that one up. I was like, oh, these two are kind of in that similar, like, got a kind of classical feel to them. Not super hard to teach a person, but super, super fun to play and like repeatable play.
Yeah, yeah. Because
what, we played two or three rounds?
I think we played three.
And we saw Pan on most of them. But we also got at least one other different one. Like I got, was it Hephaestus that I got that let me build before I moved, and then build again?
That sounds right.
I think it was Hephaestus, but like that was crazy suddenly because I'd played Athena the previous one.
Okay, yeah.
And to have it be like, okay, if you move up, the opponent can't move up. And I was like, okay, that's a neat thing. Now I'm playing a couple more. I'm like, oh, I could have totally used that way better to my advantage. But all right.
But that's the beauty of the game is that, so just for those at home, Santorini is it's a 5x5 grid of building stacking. You have your little worker meeples and you build a building. And the goal of the building is to get one of your workers to the top of the third level of a building.
Yeah. Praise the gods.
And yeah, so you can, you know, like Solaire from Dark Souls style, hold up your hands in praising of the sun at the highest vantage point.
I now really want to get my Solaire mini just for that game.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
Like, just use the chibi Solaire for it.
Yeah, yeah. There are some cards in the game that you get dealt every single time you play that give you a special ability or like some power that you don't have to do normally. So sometimes, you, like Drew was mentioning, you can build part of a building and then move and then build another part of a building, whereas normally you can only do that once.
Yeah, and movement's what? Move, build? That's it.
Exactly.
That's movement.
Yep.
Congratulations, that's the whole play other than what your card does.
Yep, yep. So like we've now actually basically explained the game. You're trying to build buildings up to three levels and then put your guy on top or figure on top. But you can also build a dome on top of that third level to block somebody from getting up to that, which is kind of like your defensive move.
You terrible mean man.
But
So other people can get on top of your buildings that you are building?
Yep. Aww. Yep. Anybody can climb up a level at a time. Some of the special powers let you do a little bit more than just moving and building.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it is Greek based, yeah? I'm not crazy.
Yeah,
I think so.
It's kind of like the disciples church are all fighting.
If it's Hephaestus and Athena, then yes, it's absolutely
Greek. I didn't know if there were other guys, like other gods within that I just didn't know about. But yeah, it's like Pan and all that. So yeah, I was like, I'm 90% sure it's all Greek themed.
Dionysus.
But, that'd be a cool one to bring in, like, it might just be my Norse kicking in, but I think it'd be fun to have a kind of cool Norse one, but instead of building buildings, you build tripiums.
Well, that'd be neat.
That makes that game a lot darker. Maybe not. Maybe that game a lot darker.
They have a New York version where you're just building skyscrapers.
That can possibly be neat.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes that game sad now. Well, because how I view it is like, it's the, in Greek mythology, lots of churches were built together.
Yeah.
But the main staple of the church, you know, there was almost always that one main staple.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I view it is you're building up all of these like cathedrals and churches and bits for the gods and such. And it's just whoever makes it to the top is the one who gets the glory spot of the church, essentially.
Fair. Yeah.
And like, that's just how my headcanon kind of runs it. And that's why I made it much sadder with the New York one. Praise be the gods of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Capitalism.
And how?
Yeah, there's
our Lord and Savior Jeff Bezos.
There's 12, 13?
Soap. You get to eat soap now.
Okay.
Okay.
I will have to buy soap from Amazon first.
I have to
get permission.
The snake is eating its tail.
From Joffrey. Oh no.
So did you have a few others that you were trying to shout out?
We were talking Santorini. I was just looking up a quick components list because I wanted to see how many gods there actually are.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. That really is where it's like a surprisingly deep well. Like, there's so many of those different characters that you can use that it really does kind of change the game
every
time.
There are 30!
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going
to... We barely scratched the surface.
I was going to say, there's a lot of gods in the Greek pantheon.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
I recently played Hades.
Oh, cool. All right.
Like, I've re-downloaded Hades, and I think I'm going to start streaming that a little bit more.
Is that the roguelike?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I really liked it. Kyle beeline so far ahead of me that like I started seeing storyline chunks that I was like, oh, I know you're not trying to spoil this for me, and I just happen to also be we both get really involved in each other's roguelike runs, like hey, I'm gonna let you run your run, but it's like, hey, you're at 12 health, you might need to do a thing, and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks buddy,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
thanks for the heads up, you know, oh hey, there's a guy with an invulnerable shield to the bottom left. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go over here, you know. Mm-hmm, just little things like that to give each other a little help.
Yeah.
So I got to see some of the, like, spoilers to that I was like, oh, I wish I had gotten that for myself. But that's still really cool. God, this game is neat.
I think you guys were playing that the last time I came by.
Yeah.
I think Kyle might have been, but...
Yeah. We were pretty hooked on it for a good chunk of time, and I'm making my way kind of back towards it when I... Until I started playing V Rising. God. I lost an hour of my life last night and didn't even realize it.
Mm.
Like, straight up, I was like, what time is it, Kyle? And he's like, 10:45, man. And I was like, what? No way. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, I thought it was like 9:30. But they really get in depth into the Greek mythology and like really show a lot of the pantheon that's more hidden away most of the time. Like,
well, and
you don't really think about Nyx. You don't really think about
well, and there's like there's
Orpheus?
Yeah,
the bard.
Mm-hmm. There's also parts of the Greek like quote pantheon that aren't considered like actual gods. Like Thanatos is technically a titan, not a god. Nyx is also technically a titan, not a god.
Yeah.
But they're part of the like overarching pantheon of mythical beings.
Yeah, and they are, and that's what's kind of why I like the Greek mythology is that they're like, not all of them are gods, but we have creatures, like we have entities that will rival them.
Well,
like, it's like they're
the
not
titans,
so all purposeful.
The titans were the gods before the gods.
Yeah.
That's kind of how Greek mythology works.
And that's why I like it. It's like, oh no, these guys still exist. They're
and then there's
just on the lower scale now.
And then there's a lot of nymphs and spirits and stuff that are also like not quite gods, but also gods to the mortals. Like,
oh, what's her name? She's a plant lady.
Nymphe.
Yes, thank you. I knew that you would be perfect for this. Nymphe. I want to see what Nymphe's card is.
Nymphe.
Nymphe?
Yeah, she got turned into a mint plant.
A mint plant?
Yes.
I think we might be thinking of different ones.
Oh, we might be thinking of a different one. Is it Demeter?
No. Demeter's not a...
She's
a god.
She's a god, but she's a goddess of, like, hearth and home and plants and spring and stuff.
I'm trying so hard right now not to do the obligatory everything
sure
relates back to magic thing.
Persephone
is the god
Persephone
of
is,
winter.
She is not. She was originally a fertility goddess before Persephone.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Yep.
You and your old lore.
I...
Recite the old rules to me. I wasn't there when they were written.
I was. No, I don't know who you're talking about then. Plant lady. Okay.
I think it starts with an E, but I can't. Mm-hmm. They just did a poor job making her look like a mint tree then.
I might be thinking. So Nymphe was a nymph that got turned into a mint
it
plant.
It was Orthesis, the...
Orpheus?
Yeah, Orpheus.
Oh, his... Eurydice?
Yeah.
Eurydice?
Yeah.
Eurydice.
She's turned into a plant lady.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, they made her, like, super planty. It's cool, because, like, they have her cook and stuff like that. And, like, she's, like, cooking in the underworld, and it's very, like, no, those guys, I don't care about them. I'm doing me now.
Okay.
But I want to see what, like, her card does.
Yeah.
I'd really like to see what Hermes' card does, because Hermes is, like, one of my favorite dudes, because he's just... He's that one dude who, no matter what kind of story that, like... It's an ancient Greek story. He's always the one that gets to break all of the rules all of the time.
Hermes is just like the most neutral of all of the neutral. He's just like, everyone's like, yeah, that's just Hermes. He's like, cool. Well, like, he can diss-talk Zeus. He can disrespect Athena.
And,
like,
and Zeus and Athena don't do shit to him because they know how his job's so important that he literally gets away with anything.
He's also, like, one of the few gods that can, like, move between Olympus and the underworld, like, completely.
No problems.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, well, like, Kyle was just reading a story of it where...
Welcome to the Game Cabinet, where we talk about ancient Greek lore.
Where essentially, all the gods are in, like, these towers, kind of, if you've ever watched Magi.
Okay.
Kind of think the Tower of Magi, but it's all the gods were, like, banished into there, and the only one who's allowed to leave, like, to the mortal world, essentially, is Hermes.
This isn't how not to pick up girls in a dungeon,
no, it's not.
Is it?
Okay. No. No, that's a different Hermes, and he's equally as badass.
Okay.
No,
it was
it's
like towers, gods. Gotcha.
I want to say it's either called Solo Leveling. It's a new manga that's coming
Solo
out.
Level. Okay, yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
It's either that or I don't think it's Overgeared. I think Overgeared is the other one. But yeah, he's been talking to me about it, and it sounds really cool. Like, twin brother was brought in, he passes away, the other twin is like called into the world. It's really neat.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what the other cards do, what the other 30 cards do. I'd also be interested to see if they're all Greek or if they brought in some of the Roman pantheon, too.
That was my question, is because I'm like, there's...
I want to say they keep it Greek.
Okay. Because the Greek and the Roman pantheon are like
so close.
Mirrors of each other,
right,
almost.
Right.
So, like, a lot of times people, when they're doing stuff like that, end up, like, kind of intermingling a few of them.
I could see it. I think they keep it to just Greeks, but yeah, it would be at the same time. It'd be fun to...
That makes me sadder, though, that we pulled Pan twice. Like, how did we roll twice on the same guy?
It's a good question.
There's 30 of them.
Good old random number generator.
Because Pan is just that dude.
Yeah. His win condition is actually kind of cool. Like, jump off a two-story building, mm-hmm. you win.
Yep.
I wanted to give a shout-out to Suro, the game of the path.
You know, I've never actually played that game.
Really?
I know it's classic.
It's so simple.
It's the dragon game, right?
There's three types. There's three different. There's the classic Suro, there's the Phoenix, and there's the sailing one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I have played that game.
Yeah. I love Suro, but I love simple game. Like, I love really just kind of sit down, play really quick, easy games. Basically, you start with a tile, a single square, and you put your and your opponent's pieces on it. And the goal of the game is to lay down, you have to draw randomly other tiles, and you want to make a path that gets you from the starting point to the end point without falling off the board.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure your opponent falls off the board.
Yeah.
So you have to play tiles in such a way to give yourself an advantage and your opponent a disadvantage.
I'm bad at this game. I'm so bad at this game. It also doesn't help that I played like primarily against like Mom and Corey to start with, who are very thinky people.
Yeah.
And until like my brain hit the patterns right.
But then you have the sailing one where they implemented new things where like you have sea monsters and stuff in it.
See, that sounds like my jam. I will send a sea monster after somebody.
So it's there's more at stake than just sailing off the edge of the map. You've got actual things on the board that you also have to watch out for.
That's sick.
And I know the Phoenix one just came out, like, actually just a few years ago.
Yeah, I haven't played that one yet.
I wonder if there's
a respawn mechanic in that one.
Possibly. I feel like they probably took a little bit of the sailing one and added, like, actual traps and stuff on the map that you could put your opponent into.
Hmm.
But I don't know what the mechanics for those would be. But it's a really easy, fun game that you can sit down. It can take a long time if you want it to take a long time.
Like any game, it can take a fat minute if you just
I think that the standard game is a 3x3 grid when you're done.
Yeah.
Like, you just get 3x3 tiles, and so it you can just go fast.
Yeah, it's a nice fast, words. It's super easy to set up, simple to teach, and mm-hmm. get a match or two in. It makes me laugh because it's one of those games that I would call almost Magic original style.
Okay.
Of like something you could play in between panels or something like
Absolutely.
That and not have to worry about like cleaning it all up.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like super easy. I think that it does come with pieces, but like literally you could use those little half marbles on the game tiles and just use those.
Yeah, a couple little dragon tears instead of using the stands and stuff.
Yeah, you don't have to like use anything fancy for it. It's just the tiles and some game pieces to move around.
Man, now I really want to paint Santorini minis though. Like, I just want to get all their workers
they're
and
so
paint them.
Cute. They're just little tiny chibbies. They're so cute.
The Phoenix version of Suro does have a respawn mechanic.
Yeah!
Nice.
That was right.
That's amazing.
I was like, why call it Phoenix if you're not gonna give a rebirth mechanic?
Oh, that
seems
good.
Really silly.
Now I want to play it.
I do too.
But I really want to paint the Santorini minis because I kind of want to try a new style I've never done before.
Okay.
I'm trying to find a YouTube video for it. So if anybody out there, any of you listeners or happen to know how to do it, if you know how to paint miniatures like they're in anime, that'd be great if you could help.
It's just about shading, man.
It's a very different style than how I normally go. I was talking with Robert because he's our Gunpla guy. He's pretty into the Gunpla scene. And he was showing me a few models, and I was like, that is exactly what I'm trying to do. Like, I want to do that on my own miniature, and I know that it's going to take some time, but, like, I want to make a... I'd like to make a knight that looks just animated. Like, that just sounds really fun to me. And
you gotta do some of that cell shading, man.
Well, you gotta... That's the thing, is that, like, cell shading's so opposite of what I'm used to, because I put on the darkest crap first, and then will willingly put that 3 or 4 layers on to get my color I want. But that is the exact opposite of how he told me. He's like, oh yeah, they all painted in this super, like, they painted in their layer, essentially, and then go back in and add their base and add their highlights. And I was like, my brain doesn't even understand. Like, how do you choose the shape of this? How do you choose like that? And that's where I realize I'm not an artist and I'm just going to continue painting minis. I'm just going to be sad for a while. Yeah. I'm going to try it and work on a few things. I've got a couple Gunpla, like I got a Zaku that I give no craps about that I think I'm going to like build up his leg and then paint. To just see if I can work on, like, be like, you know what? I don't care about you. And if I end up messing you up, you know what? Most of your suit is red anyway.
I feel like
I can just prime you a different color or blow up your leg.
I feel like the most important part is picking a singular light source and just building all of your shadows from that singular light source.
He told me not to do that. He told me that that's like part of the aesthetic, is that it's one of those weird art styles where when you rotate the model, that needs to be where your light source is for that edge, because otherwise it doesn't look quite right from, like, if you look at it from the back and you're like, oh, why is this so dark? And then you flip it over and it's like,
I don't mean that. I mean, like, not like the solid, like, not the whole back of a leg, but like where things overlap.
Yeah. Picking that one. Okay. From this angle, we're going to do it the light source from this way. And then we got to rotate and be like, okay, well, the light source is going to come from this way. It's just an art style I'm not used to drawing. I've watched thousands of hours of, but I've never tried to draw or paint or color.
I think, getting back onto the topic at hand, because we'll just go off on a tangent about painting forever.
I want to paint tiny epic characters, too. Like the little meeples. Like the little mech meeples, too.
That'd be
really fun.
There's so many games that it's hard to pick games to talk about that are just easy, cheap, and fun.
Yeah.
I got one to shout out.
Ooh,
yeah, yeah, go to it.
Have you guys ever heard of Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza?
Only recently.
Yes, I have heard of it. No, I haven't played it.
It's simple. What is it? It's simple. It's very cute. It's everybody plays cards in turn order, like, you know, one at a time. And you say what you're playing as you play them. And there are, I think it's like if there's like a matching set of cards in the middle, you can slap and take them. But then there's like three special cards. One of them's a narwhal. One of them's, I'll have to look it up here in a second to figure out what they are. But you have to, so when these cards come up, you have to do a thing. Like for narwhal, you have to like make your hands into a narwhal horn above your head, and then you can slap and grab the cards.
That's cool.
I mean, it's just, it's a very simple, silly fun card game that is like $8 or $10 or something.
That
and it's
sounds
just
that's not fabulous. Bad. So, I love that.
That one and Poetry for Neanderthals were the two like absolute hits of my like family Christmas gathering. Like,
oh, nice.
If there was downtime, people were playing one or the other.
How was Poetry of a Neanderthal? I've looked at it a couple of times and I'm like, I like it just because of the name. And I'm like, I'm not the greatest at poetry, so I think this would be fun.
It's really good.
Is it?
It is. So the premise of that one, since I did a wonderful job at describing Taco Cat Goat Cheese Pizza, but Poetry for Neanderthals is pretty simple. It's a word game where you have to get your team to guess what's on a little scorecard kind of a thing where it's got like, you know,
charades-esque.
A little bit, yeah. It's got a simple word and then another thing that has that word, but then another word or something else with it. So it's like easy mode, hard mode.
Okay, so like baseball, you know, baseball glove.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly. And you have to get your team to guess what that is using single syllable words.
Okay.
Oh,
it's a lot trickier than you'd imagine.
Yeah.
And I assume that you couldn't say ball. If you're trying to get baseball.
Right, correct. Yeah, okay. You can't use words that are contained in
the thing. Oh, okay, yeah. Exactly. Cool.
Sphere.
Round.
I was like, circle. Oh, shit, that's round. Two syllables.
It's two syllables.
Sphere?
So,
yeah.
The kicker is that there's always the impending threat of an inflatable caveman club to the person to your right who just taken their turn gets past the mallet or the whatever the club, and if you use a more than one syllable word, they get to give you a little bop. Just a little bop.
Just a little bop.
But then they pass their turn.
Oh, that's dangerous to my friends.
I love that.
It's ridiculously fun.
If you get a bop, do you lose your turn?
You do.
Oh, okay.
You do. Yeah.
Oh man.
I'll run from my bopping.
I use way too many large words on a day-to-day basis. I don't know if I would be good at that game.
I would be so good at this game.
It, the club has a has an upset, open, like wide-eyed, frowny face, like very very imposing. You know,
I love it so much.
Between those two games, like my whole family was like occupied with games in the downtime of what was going on and stuff. Like it, it's pretty delightful.
That's dope. Another good one to shout out. A little more on the not necessarily on the spendy side, just above that card game style, like your basic entry level board game, King of Tokyo.
Oh yeah.
Don't know why that one didn't pop up on my brain. It takes a little bit longer than I think most of the games that we've talked about. It takes a solid half an hour, 45 minutes.
That's fair.
On like super average and low scale. But everybody gets to be a kaiju of some sort, whether it's giant robot, alien thing, their fake Godzilla, Yeti monster, bunch of different things. But essentially, one person has taken over Tokyo. And then as it goes around in turns, people are trying to fight the creature in Tokyo to take over Tokyo and then place their model in the middle. And at the end of any fight, or right before any fight, I think it is, whoever's in the middle can choose to leave.
Okay.
They can be like, I don't need, like, I'm at, you know, 4 hit points or whatever.
Yeah.
You have X amount of hit points. I think it changes based on what creature you are. But it's like, oh, I'm down to, like, one hit, essentially. I'm just going to leave and take my points that I got.
Okay.
And the longer you're in, the more points you accumulate, so on and so forth. They've got really cool, fun, unique power cards that you get to play. You have to, like, when you roll your dice in the middle, you can get, like, lightning bolts that are energy.
Aww.
You can get paws that help
I
you
love
attack
them.
Back. but when you get the little lightning bolts and you get energy, you can start playing, like, upgrade cards to your kaiju.
Okay.
So it's like, I'm playing Godzilla, but he develops wings.
Nice.
And it gives me 3 extra power, you know, or, oh, I'm going to use his, you know, I'm playing giant robot and I use Giga Blast, you know, super cheesy, like super cheesy named cards like that
love
too.
Love it though.
But it's so much fun. My little brothers loved it for a really long time. Like it was one that I had to finally be like, guys, I love you. Stop asking me to play. It's been like every day for a month now.
Fair.
And but like that one was a super easy one, and I'm a stupid big fan of Liar's Dice. I'm always gonna bring up Liar's Dice when we talk about cheap or like small, more casual games. I am always gonna bring up Liar's Dice, so expect to hear about Liar's Dice at least 1 to 3 times a year.
It's super fun, it's super easy, and it literally requires nothing but dice to play.
$12, you get 36 D6s, 6 people can now play, and go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You literally don't need anything else. If you want, get some fancy cups. I like fancy cups. I actually
fancy cups are fun.
Really regret not taking the time when I thought about it in high school when I did woodshop to make multiple cups.
Yeah.
And make me a like nice little like, oh, you know what? I'm going to make a nice little tray for this, a nice little thing, and then I'm going to make like cups for my Liar's Dice game.
You hold your pinky out as you shake and toss your dice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fancy cups. Ooh, you can make little cups with little handles so you can just shake it like a little proper tea set mm-hmm, and then
so go as fancy as you want, but all you need is 6 dice people.
Yeah. And that's what I really like about it. Like, now all I can think of is I really want to take my tankard and play.
Oh my god.
Clap him at my tankard and just clack.
I would be remiss.
I got metal D6s for that.
I would be remiss not to bring up, because I feel like I'm going to bring this up every time we talk about cheap, easy games, Milborns.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite card game of all time.
It's a good one.
It's so good. It's just you're driving around in your car and you're collecting speed limit signs to earn points. It's like a perfect mix of like Rummy and like Uno.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's actually a really good way to describe that game.
Yeah.
I've never put the two together, but the second you said it, I was like, oh yeah, it is actually.
Yeah, you've got trump cards that you can play to like make your car more invulnerable to different status effects and things like that. And
that's so cool.
It's so fun. It can be a fast game to play. I think you can either play to 500 or 1,000 points, depending on what you want to do.
What you need.
So you can get it can last 15 minutes or it can last an hour. Depends on who you're playing it with and what you guys want to do and how mean everybody is to each other.
See, and that's actually a good segue into one that I really want us to play. I have a copy, so we just need to get a chance for all of us to get together. Mm-hmm. But we're all relatively creative storytellers.
Ooh.
and I would love to play Gloom with everyone.
Oh, because play, that's love Gloom.
One of those ones I've never had the chance to play with fellow GMs, where there are storytellers in the room, where there are people who can actually bring that narrative play that's supposed to be there. Every time I've ever played, it's mostly like heavy. I'm going to refer to them as PCs for this.
Yeah.
It's normally my PCs and I are playing, and it's they're
for those of you listening along at home that don't know, PC means player character.
They're my guys who play in my game. But they're storytellers, but they're used to feeding off of me.
Yeah.
And not making their own story as we go, kind of a deal.
Oh, and so and Gloom is so fun. If you haven't heard of Gloom, the whole point of Gloom is to make your specific character that you are playing have the worst life imaginable.
Your family.
Up to the point of death.
Yeah.
And the other player's goal is to give you good life events to make you not die.
Yeah, like one of the ones I saw on, not sponsored, but a nice little shout out to name slipped me, Tabletop, with that guy.
Tag?
No. Nope.
Watch it played?
With the, nope, with the Will Wheaton guy.
Oh, Tabletop.
Yeah, okay, it is just Tabletop. It's just not crazy. I was like, I haven't watched it in forever, and they haven't put out anything in a million. No. And it's, I mean, they've got their Rebecca Scott now,
who
she's getting picked up for all sorts of crazy crap.
Well, like, good for her. She's awesome.
Like when I went to do a like quick little refresh on, hey, can I get a refresh on my Horizon Zero Dawn game real quick? It was her up like being sponsored by Steamforge.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was like, oh, dude, she's getting to actually like break out and do her own thing. But he did. I've lost my thought.
Gloom.
Yeah, they did Gloom, and one of my thank you so much. I completely just gone. But they played some Gloom, and one of my favorite bits was they were like, little Susie on her way home is attacked by rats and is infected. And they're like, all right, here's my negative points. And they're like, all right. And it's like, she got to the hospital. They administered the wrong medication, extra allergic reaction points. And then a dude comes rolling up and is like, but you know what? When she was in that hospital having that terrible, awful time, she did happen to meet true love. And it's negative points.
No.
It's negative points. So you just hear the guy go, man, come on. I don't need no true love. Like, it's just truly one of those moments of like all the good things you suddenly get really annoyed about. And it makes me laugh when it's like, it's no longer, oh, she found true love. That's super cute after all this horrible stuff. No, get that out of here. He got hit by a car. Like, just as miserable as possible.
Such a cool game.
I love Gloom so much. It's so sad. Well, I love it.
Got so many flavors now. I think they've got 3 or 4 flavors now.
They do. Well, and if you have never seen the cards for this game, they've got like, they're clear plastic with the art on them, and they have these weird little spots that overlay other cards.
Like, Cranium, I think is the one I'm thinking of.
They're basically window cards.
Yeah.
They're very
That's
beautiful.
The term I was looking for. It's like they're like the cards that you'd find in Starbucks.
So you can actually, you have your character down, and then when you lay cards on top of it, you can still see your character, but it adds status effects and stuff around your character. Mm-hmm. It's really neat.
It is neat.
I wish we could get Cranium games. I think they died.
I also...
They might have.
Really, like, we're getting into like almost party game-ish stuff. I really like Flux.
Agreed. Agreed. Fluxes. I don't think that game gets enough credit.
I don't think it does. And there are so many different kinds of Flux that you can find one for every single group that you have. Mm-hmm. Like, there's Fairy Tale Flux, there's Cthulhu Flux, there's Zombie Flux, there's Math Flux, there's...
Drinking Flux.
Drinking Flux, Star Trek, Star Wars, Marvel.
Yeah.
Math.
Yes.
Anatomy.
Go very poorly. And I've been afraid of Flux ever since.
I love Flux because it's one of those games where the rules, like, there's a standard base set of rules, but then as you play it, you change the rules.
Yeah. I think it starts with just draw a card and play a card.
Yep. Yeah.
And then you can change any of
the... You can change the end game goals. Mm-hmm. You can change literally everything.
The draw, the play. There's nothing better than draw 6 cards, play 2.
Yeah.
Just this wad of cards in your hand by the end. No, the last one I played happened to have instructions for tag along, essentially.
Oh.
And that got real bad real quick.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. We were not paying attention. We played far too many games of it, I think was the main part. And all of us ended up just passing out before we could play that last one. It was fun, but it was one of those like, oh, we meant to party and hang out tonight, and we played this, and now we're toasted.
Yeah, you got to be careful with like the drinking flux and stuff like that. They are party games, but they can make the party a little too fun.
Red Dragon Inn! Red Dragon It's Inn! One of my favorite drinking yes! games. It really is.
That one could get...
For like $40, that game gets super dangerous.
Yeah, I was going to say. Especially if you're drinking along with the game. The point of it is to not let your sober meter and your drunk meters hit in the middle.
Yep.
And I'm sure that the real life goal almost is exactly the same with that game.
I had one friend who decided they were going to not be the smartest, even after I told them multiple times, don't do it. But at the beginning of the game, like whenever we do drinking games with some of my friends, we do, all right, before the game starts, take a drink. That is now your drink. Whether that's a sip off your beer, whether that's a shot, whether it's a pull off of your cocktail, whatever, that's your drink, right? Comes to that moment and he pours a shot glass and slaps it. And we're like, dude, that's your drink if you do that. This is your literal last chance to call out of that because you're going to, like,
you're
going to
die,
I'm
bud.
Worried. Like, I'm worried about your health on this one. Well, and he was like, no, it's fine, it's fine. About 20 minutes later, he's leaving the table because he's just toasted. Ooh. Well, and on top of that, you showed all of us you were going to be dumb enough to take a shot. Lots of drinks ended up his way. Yeah. Lots of drinks ended up.
Red Dragon Inn is one of those ones that I don't always encourage people to turn into an actual drinking game.
Well, and that's why I'm like, hey, whenever I do, I'm very much like, hey, this can be a fun drinking game. Don't do shots. Like, that is the first thing I say. Don't do shots. A drink is what you make it.
Yeah.
Go get some light beer. Go get a Bud Light or whatever. Get some light beer. Have a nice sip off of it. Playing an entire game, you'll get a nice little buzz going.
Yeah.
You'll be okay. Don't do shots.
It's a great game without it being a drinking game, too.
It's also great without that. But I will say my favorite times have almost always been when drinking with that game. That's fair. Just a nice little addition to that and how silly it is.
Yeah
like
it's such a silly game.
I love that game. The like rogue stealing people's money, warrior beating the crap out of people for being pain in their butt. I love that game. I love how many expansions there are to it.
So many characters.
Another really fun PvP game for under $30, just about $30, Dice Throne.
Yeah, I just started getting into
that. We just got so many expansions in for it.
We just restocked them all.
They're so good. And it's literally just like random characters from a ton of different settings, like Robin Hood and Bigfoot.
Yep.
Yeah. And you just play a game against each other and try and beat each other.
Yeah. Each character comes with their own unique dice with their own unique symbols on it. Mm-hmm. Everything that you need's on your player, like on your card for that character.
And I believe like each game itself is a standalone game. But I think once you have the characters, you can mix and match. You can just play a bunch of different characters together.
It honestly plays out kind of like a game of Magic, but with dice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's just like everybody's got their archetype and their deck and their structure and stuff. They put like the strangest combinations of characters together
so
in each one.
So weird.
But you're Ryan Gunslinger.
Right, yeah. But you're 100% right. You can mix and match any of them and play any characters against any others.
And it's
Kyle and I played that night that we were trying to play Dice Thrones.
Trying our hardest.
Yeah.
But it did not really work.
I think the next day, Kyle and I ended up playing some because I was like, I really do want to try this out.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was one of the few that I pulled up and Katie was even like, I know this game. My D-gens like to play it.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I thought I saw some of them coming and buying stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, I might end up trying to actually get into like buying one or two of those to play, depending on whether I decide to just be okay with playing on Board Game Arena or not.
I guess the whole point of this episode is just to remind people that like we talk a lot about games like Horizon Zero Dawn that are like $80 or Gloomhaven that's like $200 or whatever.
Or the pros and cons of Games Workshop, which is a really intense miniatures game.
Which is really expensive.
Or anything by Steamforge that just costs so much money.
Because they're so amazing.
But there's so many good games out there that are under $50 that are just delightful and fun and replayable and good for groups of people. I mean, we didn't even touch half of them. There's so many.
There's so many good games out there for it, but all of those are for another time, as I try not to throw my mic across the room.
A really, really small, quick update. We had talked about the Tiny Epic Games towards the end of last year, I think, when we were like leading into the holidays. We were talking about them being $25 or less, and they were like actively in the middle of a price increase while we were talking about them. So they've now kind of bumped up to $29.99 being the kind of baseline price
point. You know what?
Which is honestly still such a good price.
Not too bad.
It's like a V Rising, where I bought it for the $20 that I got it for, and then was like, I had to pay $40 for this.
Well, I think when we did our Tiny Epic Games episode, a lot of people get a little hung up on the price of the Tiny Epic Games because the boxes are so small.
Right.
But it's a huge game packed into that.
Like,
if that was a normal sized game, it would be
80 plus.
Yeah, 80 plus. It would be on the scale of like Catan Spacefarers, like just a big chunky box.
The one that I've played the most, I think, is Kingda Ultra Tiny Epic Ultra Tiny Kingdoms?
Ultra Tiny Epic Kingdoms?
Thank you. That's the one. Nailed it.
Say that five times fast.
No.
But I've played that one quite a bit, which was fun. And especially the Ultra Tiny ones are super cheap. They're like, what, maybe 20 now? I think they're 15 still.
They were either 12 or 15, I mean, they're in like a deck of cards size box, but it's still the full game made
tiny,
ultra tiny, which is super cool. But yeah, Tactics is the other one that I have my most time into. It's a small version of the D&D board games.
It's either
I'm playing against somebody and we're kind of adventuring groups trying to adventure and fight each other, or if you're playing solo mode, it is straight up a go into these dungeons, fight the guys that are in there, take the treasure, and then win the day.
That's a pretty heavy game for being tiny.
For being $30 and so tiny, and a lot of people, like you were saying, look at it and are like, well it's such a tiny box, and I'm like, yeah, but this has got as much in it almost as that Lords of Waterdeep does.
Especially because, like, at least in our store, and I'm sure other game stores too, we keep ours with the card games because the boxes are so small. That's where it has to live, because it would just get lost on the regular wall. And so people are like going through card games and they're looking at these card games that are like $20, $15, you know, that kind of stuff. And then you get to this $30 game and you're like, what is this? It is an entire board game shrunk down into this tiny box.
I want to play Zombies because it looks like Zombies. Like the Tiny Epic Zombies. It looks like the board game from back in the day.
I want to get Tiny Epic Dinosaurs so bad.
I do too.
Dino meeples are so cute.
I just want the dino meeples. That's all I want. I want to put them on a shelf. I just want to put a little row of dino meeples.
And just paint up.
I don't even care. I just want them there. They can be plain little meeples. They're so cute.
I guess the shilly salesman in me is trying to think of something else. But the blast off version of Tiny Epic Galaxies.
Oh yeah.
I stocked up on that for the store before it went out of print or it went up in price. So that is still on the shelf for $20.
Ooh, well, there you go.
Get out there and get it then, guys.
That's still probably my favorite out of all of them.
It's a really good one, and I think I played that one once or twice.
Okay.
But that one was a lot of fun, and if you can get it for a little cheaper right now, get out there, get that first Tiny Epic game, and you'll be as hooked as George and I are.
Right. Well, and I love to, I was actually talking to a customer about this yesterday, because they were buying Tiny Epic Dinosaurs, and I was like, oh my god, this is great. But we were talking about how cool it is that Tiny Epic, they kind of have a base formula, but every single game is unique.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like you're playing Tiny Epic Western flavor. It doesn't feel like you're playing Tiny Epic Dinosaur flavor. It is its own game with its own mechanics and completely different rules.
Which, especially with games that tend to follow a name like that, like Tiny Epic insert game,
it's not Munchkin Marvel.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I was saying. It is that opposite. Like, Munchkin is that way, but this is one of those ones that fights that standard that people
like,
kind of made.
They're like staggeringly unique from one another.
Which is insane to me because they're so compact and so well thought out, but they're also just such unique games.
So good.
I love the Tiny Epic.
What a good note to end this on. Tiny Epic.
And with that, we'll give you guys a tiny goodbye.
Oh.
And we'll slide away our stack this week. Close up the cabinet, and we'll catch you next time.
You've been listening to The Game Cabinet at the AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store to browse the selections or inquire about special orders. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.